everybody. You are listening to the Room for Both podcast. We are Nicole and Meredith, longtime friends who decided to start this podcast to process the gray areas of life. Sometimes we'll have strong opinions. Mostly we'll have a lot of questions. At the end of the day, we want this to be a conversation that leaves room for both, for going deep and keeping it light, for funny and serious. Our hope is that by dialoguing in such an intentional and inclusive way, we can learn and grow and just get a better sense of how much we're all just in this together.
We're off to the races.
It took an act of Congress to get going.
It literally took an hour and a half to get going.
But can I just say, we are calling in from Jeff's brand new music studio that he built with his bare hands.
Bare hands. Literally. And it is like beautiful, beautifully lit, and like his, it's got like a mini shiplap vibe happening.
Yeah. He's got like built-in guitar stand, built-in monitor stands, windows, like the whole, the man should have been in construction.
Honestly, I'm like, holy, like, that's an undertaking. Like, you could never look at me and say, hey, Mayor, could you go ahead and just build out a studio? There's no way my brain cells would even function to form that plan.
Before we get into the meat of our podcast, we are going into our first segment, which we are calling Shoot the Breeze. It's literally the time of the show where we catch up and talk about things we're loving, that we're into, just the light stuff, you know? So we think you'll enjoy this little bit.
Okay, so tell me what's been going on. What's been giving you life this last week since we've spoken?
Okay, so there are two things that I was thinking about for Shoot the Breeze today. And I feel like I need to preface every Shoot the Breeze with the recognition that I could totally be the last person to the party on every single thing that I recommend because
amazing.
I'm such a freaking hermit. However, just because I ate them today.
You know cool things.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that.
You do.
Just because I ate them tonight and so I'm thinking about them, I know that you don't have a Leon in the States.
I don't.
But, so if you're in the UK and you have a Leon, their, what do they call them? Their sweet corn ribs with truffle and cheese are incredible. And this is applicable to everybody. So have you ever served corn this way where you cut it? So if you're staring at the cob, you cut it in fourths, like long ways, and then you eat it like a rib. Have you heard of this?
I was going to ask you what a corn rib is, because that was the most foreign thing I've ever heard in my life. But no.
It's genius. So you're not holding the giant thing of corn and turning it around. You've got these little quadrisections.
Quadrants.
I don't know how you do.
Quadrants.
Yeah. And you hold it like a rib, and you eat it like a rib, and then it's like the core is what you leave behind, like the bone of a rib. It's brilliant.
Okay, see, next time you have that, I need you to take a picture. Send it to me and I'll post from the Room for Both account so that whoever listens to this can physically see what in the hell
you need
a corn
the
on the cob rib is. I need the visual.
I know.
Scott's coming in, so we're going to have a whole little thing.
Anyway, Scotty the
hottie. It's the end of the day. He is a hot man. I will not lie about it. it's just true. 17 years in and I'm still like, bro, how? Okay, so corn on the cob ribs with cheese and truffle aioli and cilantro, like, deliciousness.
Gave me life literally tonight. And then the other thing, okay, have you heard of a skylight frame?
I've heard of a skylight. I don't know about a skylight frame.
It's essentially a digital picture frame, which can be cheesy. However, this one just looks like a normal picture frame. My aunt gave it to my parents for Christmas. And then my mom, so all of all the kids in the family, we downloaded the app and we can literally just upload photos and they just feed it into my mom's picture frame in her living room.
No,
it's
no.
It's an ingenious gift for your parents or grandparents or somebody.
Your in-laws? I'm like, that's freaking brilliant.
It's not cheap because we actually looked into getting Jeff's one. And I think it's the type of thing, either splurge, great, or like go in with all the kids and get it for the parents or something. But so today I finally dressed Nora up. I haven't taken her out of her pajamas because we've been on lockdown. I put her in like a little t-shirt and jeans today with a little bow, took a picture, and then I immediately uploaded it to my parents' picture frame, and they saw it in the living room. It's ingenious.
Oh my gosh. I can't. That is... Okay, I'm on cloud nine. I feel like everyone needs to know about that. That's the most amazing gift ever, especially because, like, for grandparents or in-laws or whatever, like, especially when you start having babies, that is just so important and good and wonderful, and I love it so much. That helps them feel connected instantly. Like, oh my gosh, it's instant. It's almost like, it's like the compromise for time travel. Like, she can't be with you right now, but look, Nora's in her living room. All of a sudden, there she is. Do you know what I'm saying?
And it makes it, I imagine them like in the living room all cozy drinking tea, and then like a new photo pops up, and I don't know. It's just a brilliant idea.
Oh my gosh. I love that so much.
So what's giving you life right now?
What is giving me life? Okay.
Let's talk about your beanie, because you've been wearing your beanie nonstop.
Oh yeah. Incessantly. Like, has she showered? Yes, I have, but there are cowlicks and I just wear the beanie.
Is it a particular brand that you love, like the fit you love, or it's just like this beanie, like any beanie would do?
I mean, I truly believe in my bones, any beanie would do, but this is Madewell, and I've been really, really loving her. Let me think about something else I've been really loving. Oh, I did, I think I talked about this last time, but Onyx Method Yoga, they incorporated a yoga teacher. She handed me my ass on a silver platter, but I loved every second of it. I was nearly crawling the next day because of whatever the hell was worked in my hips. I was like, I don't know that I can bend down. But I really, really was worked, and it was lovely, and she was lovely, and I just felt like, oh my gosh, I think what it is, here's what it is. The Onyx Method is just context for me that my body has come so far, because four or five years ago, whatever, when I was living in San Antonio, I had a bad, bad back situation, and I was locked up, could not bend over, was genuinely scared one day that I would not be able to, like, pick up a kid. Like, I thought, I'm not a mom yet, I still want to be, like, I'm not going to be able to bend over in my kid's crib and pick him up. And my body has come so far, and the fact that I can do all of these things now, not perfectly, but, like, it is just so... encouraging to me. So that's why I talk about it as much as I do. But anyway, I was proud of myself for doing yoga.
That's incredible. And you know me, I love, love, love yoga.
I know it.
But thank you for saying not perfectly, because I feel like that's the perfect segue into what we're talking about in Processing Out Loud.
Now we're going to move into the more meaty part of the show that we're calling Processing Out Loud. This is the portion of the podcast where we're going to dive into topics we've been thinking about or wrestling with, and really just invite you along for the journey.
Okay, guidepost number two. Let's set the stage. What are we talking about? Where are we going today, Nick?
Yeah, so we are still in our series on Brené Brown's Guidepost to Wholehearted Living from The Gifts of Imperfection. That's her book. Yes, talking about guidepost number two, which is letting go of perfectionism and cultivating self-compassion. What are your, like, where should we start?
Well, so what's interesting is I don't necessarily identify as a perfectionist. In fact, I'm sort of antithetical to that. However, I can be a bit of a control freak. So I'm curious for you, as someone, I would say, like, you are more particular. Like, I'm thinking about, like, I'm wondering how perfectionism manifests in your life, especially because you can move to a one in hell. So what is the healthy side of perfectionism for you? And, like, where have you found the difference in, like, healthy striving versus perfectionism in your own life? Because you can dip into that number.
Oh, yes, I can. It's so interesting because, well... Man, the shitty thing about Brené's research is that it all comes back to shame. So, like, I feel like at the beginning of the chapter, she said something about, like, when we don't claim shame, it claims us. And I was like, it's so true.
I know. Yeah. And that was good.
So then just thinking about perfectionism, I started thinking about, like, where does it come from for me? What are the aspects of my life that I see it show up the most? And... Jeff and I have had a few conversations about this recently. I love my family. You know that.
Oh, sure.
I would say, though, that my family, I don't feel like we were a family that necessarily held a worldview of, like, inherent worth. I feel like it was earned worth in my family. I don't think that either of my parents would say that. Like, of course they believe in the inherent worth of all of us and everybody.
Sure.
But I feel like the way we did life, something in me latched on to this notion of like, you got to earn it. Like even, you know, you were with me academically. I always felt like I had to have the answer. Well, I always thought there was an answer and then I had to have it.
Sure.
I always had to do the reading. It wasn't like I could just show up having not read and like not knowing what was going on. I always had to be on my game. And I think what she talks about is just how exhausting the hustle is. And it's not life-giving and it's not going to yield a wholehearted life because you're just freaking tired all the time.
But I hear, okay, so like knowing some perfectionist, quote unquote, in my life, right? And I'm sure we all know perfectionists in our lives, right? It is exhausting, but there is a way in which they perfectionists become accustomed to that level of exhaustion. I wonder what it takes then for the pain to become so great or the exhaustion level to become so high that they say, oh, I'm tired of this.
See, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. I also think it's interesting to hear you talk about it in terms of like perfectionists or not perfectionists, because I actually think that there's perfectionism in all of us, depending on the thing, right? So we probably...
Yeah, that's true.
It's like
that's
such
true.
A continuum. And I think that we have aspects of life that comes out in us. That's just how I'm thinking about it right now.
I was just going to say it's helpful to be reminded of like that I am looking at it dualistically and also too through the lens of my own personal framework, maybe like, well, I'm not a perfectionist and I know people who are. Yeah, and I think I think I'm, if I'm honest and if I can like honestly assess, I'm having trouble with this particular, I don't know, notion, maybe because I have some like energy around my experience with perfectionism from like being on the other side of that with people. And so I think I've got probably a guard up and maybe some unnecessary or unhelpful or unkind judgments or exhaustion around it. Does that make sense? Where I almost find myself wanting to stay in dualism because I have some kind of self-protection thing up around perfectionists. Do you know what I mean?
It makes so much sense to me right now that your walls are up even thinking about the topic, because I think that's the entire point of perfectionism, is that the walls are up, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So your experience on the other side of quote unquote perfectionistic people puts your walls up because their walls are inherently up, because the whole joke is that all of us are imperfect. That's the human condition. So like, why are we even trying to fool ourselves with perfectionism?
Well, to your point about fooling yourself, I mean, I think that ties perfectly into what she says about perfectionism is more about perception. We want to be perceived as perfect. And even if it's not perfect, we want to be perceived as something, right? Like, I don't necessarily need to be perceived as, quote, perfect, but my perfect, let's just use that context, like, my perfect looks like being competent or being, like, there's a perception that I am projecting that I want people to associate with me, right?
Yeah.
I've got it all together. Nothing to see here, folks. There's something to that perception thing, and I think that that's what kind of pierces my soul in this particular guidepost more than even the perfection thing, is the perception of what I want people to see in me.
Yeah, and I wonder, like you're saying, is that a form of perfectionism just in a different way? Like I think about,
right.
For you, if you've let somebody down or pissed somebody off, or which I know you're doing work around, right? But like you hate letting your people down or feeling like you've let your people down. Is that an area that, like, you feel like you need to be perfect for your people? And when you're not, like, are you hard on yourself? Do you show yourself self-compassion? I wonder if that's a way to connect.
That's helpful. Yes, I would say yes. Because I think another way for me to say it would be striving. Excuse me. Because you're right. Like, I want to lead perfectly. I want to be the best leader for my team. I want to be the best, you know, health mentor for my clients. I want to approach tender topics like super well, like Brené Brown would. Do you know what I mean? And just like be faultless when it comes to human relationships and human interactions and conflict in particular. Like because it's discomfort, right? I do not want to face I don't want to face conflict because it means discomfort for me or potentially letting someone down or having awkwardness between us and the dynamics of the relationship. And so I really strive and drive myself crazy with how to navigate certain things. And yes, I would submit that would be my version of perfectionism for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know about self-compassion.
I mean, when I was trying to think about how perfectionism manifests itself most in my life, I would say in my relationships, it manifests itself the most. Even, I mean, when Jeff and I were early dating, I remember like trying to break it off with him because he had seen my shadow self. You know what I mean? And it was just kind of like,
wow.
To me, it was better to cut and run. And thank God he had the maturity to say like, you know, whoever you end up with after me is going to see this side of you eventually too, right?
You can't
escape it. So we could just keep going and you could let me love you even though you're not perfect. Because newsflash, I knew you weren't perfect.
So good.
But yeah, I feel like in relationships, I maybe it's because I care so much, or maybe this is the Enneagram 4 coming out, who like maybe deeply believes there's something deficient in me, that it's like I feel like I have to beat other people to that punch and be perfect in a relationship before they see the deficiency. This is why I hate Brené's work. It's because it gets to that shame place. Like,
yes.
And it's like, heaven forbid I handled a situation poorly or I let a friend down. And then it's like, I want to then just like cut and run rather than face the fact that like I'm not perfect.
I think too, I wonder what your thoughts would be around this. You know, she talks about how one of the ways it's helpful to kind of get out of perfectionism is to realize that it is a shared human experience. We all fall short. We all mess up. We all are going to be judged or misunderstood or misrepresented or do something, right? Or just do something that is
it's literally whatever. The rule. Like, it's the pattern.
Just exactly. It is just the way of being human and alive. However, I think what's tricky for me is that's all fine and well to be like, you know what? It's a shared human experience. This happens to everybody. But like, when the thing actually happens and you are being held accountable for something, or you are revealed as not being perfect, right? Or something, you have a misstep and whatever. The problem in that moment is you feel very alone. It's not like everyone else around you is having the same experience. You know what I'm saying? So yes, it's a shared experience from a human condition perspective, but the time itself can feel quite isolating.
The
event itself, whenever that happens, and it will over and over. Yeah, it's like, shit, I'm very alone. I made a boo-boo. I feel like an idiot. I effed up here, you know? And that's where it can kind of feel like, I don't want to do it. You know what I mean?
Yes. Which is so interesting that then her first way out of that is like, self-kindness.
Another thing to think about when kind of combating perfectionism and moving into self-compassion and like, oh, that's okay, is doing it with the small thing so that when the bigger thing comes, you've got that muscle memory.
Yeah.
You know, of like when she talks about having misspelled someone's name in an email, the person, the author of the book, she wanted to quote an author in this literal book, The Gifts of Imperfection. She wrote that author an email. And in the email, she misspelled the author's name. And the author was like, hey, you can totally use my quote just as a quick PSA. You misspelled my name. And Brené was like, oh my gosh, I feel like such an idiot, right? But it's like, because Brené has been, you know, doing this work, she had a little note beside her on her computer that was like, you are whatever the note said. You are special, you are loved, it's all good, whatever the heck it said, right? Something kind, some kind of kind affirmation. And that wasn't what it was, but it was some kind of kind affirmation that, like, was able to recenter Brené of, like, yeah, it's okay. I misspelled her name in an email, it's okay. So that when something bigger happens, it feels like those are the kind of steps we have to take on the kind of micro level, so that when something bigger happens and that yes. we look like an idiot for whatever other thing, or we are, again, whatever the thing is, then it's like, oh, I've practiced this. I'm okay. I'm yes. loved. I'm inherently good. There's nothing wrong here. Like, in fact, it's okay for me and even offensive if I show myself some radical self-compassion, and it might confuse people. It doesn't mean that it's wrong for me to extend to myself some self-compassion around, you know, whatever the situation is.
I totally agree with that. I think too, so the three things that she mentioned were self-kindness, common humanity, so recognizing that everybody, this is, like you were saying, the pattern, everybody screws up. Perfectionism isn't real.
Yeah.
And then the third, mindfulness, which is what I think you're getting at too, which is like perspective, right? Like being able to have some levity around it,
or
like,
way to say it.
Yeah, just like understand that it's not that big of a deal at the end of the day. The other thing, well, actually, what you're just saying reminds me of this past week. I literally had this happen in a very small way. So I went to the post office twice in like the course of a week. And the first time I went, I had lugged this big box. Jeff needed to return a mic to a friend, and he was going to watch Nora. I wanted to get out. So I'm like lugging this big box. It's like a mile walk to the post office, and it starts raining, and I didn't bring an umbrella. So I'm like, I get to the post office, I'm standing in line. And from the second I walk in the door, the guy in the post office is like, can't take a wet box.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely not.
No, but literally, Meredith, I thought about our conversation this last episode where we talked about the don't puff up, don't shrink, stand my sacred ground. And I was so freaking proud of myself. I said, okay. I said, I totally get that. I said, I just walked a mile here lugging this box. So like, what are my options? Can I buy a dry box and repack it? Like, and we figured it out, and he and I had a lovely exchange. He was very friendly. Like, it, I left feeling on cloud nine, like, damn, this was awesome. I didn't shrink, because the old me would have just shrunk back. Like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Like, I'll have to come back. But I was like, no, I don't want to walk back with this box. So it was a great moment. Okay, 2 days later, I'm at the same exact post office, and I mailed what I needed to mail, and then randomly in the purse that I was carrying, I found an old scratch-off, because sometimes Jeff will come back from the gas station and bring me a scratch-off
sure.
as like a sweet gesture. And I had won $10, so I went to turn it in. The guy gave me my $10. And then I was buying something small. It was like a pound or something. And I was going to just tap my phone and pay, because right now with COVID, I don't like handling money. And the guy looks at me and he's like, I just gave you a 10. Why won't you give me cash? And I got flustered and I was like, oh, I don't care. And I like gave him the money and I like did what he wanted me to do in the moment. And I shrunk, right? And then I left the post office,
sure.
and I was like, damn it, you shrunk. Like, why did you do that? And I was being so hard on myself. And then I finally, thank God we live a mile from home, because finally during the course of the walk, I was like, Nicole, this is one experience in a post office. Like, think about your universe book. Like, you're one person and like billions of people. And over the course of billions of years of history of the earth, like, this is not a big deal. And it like let me not like wallow in my quote unquote failure of the day of like not shrinking. All that to say, I think
so
you're right. I think it's in those tiny, stupid, and seemingly insignificant moments that, like, if we can start to practice self-kindness and self-compassion and mindfulness and perspective, then maybe it becomes a bigger habit.
Ugh. I now have so much conviction around how I just responded to Mail Guy, because I, did you hear me instantly puff up? I learned nothing from last week's conversation. I was like, oh, hell no. Don't tell me I can't come in here with the wet box that started raining. Do you have any control of the rain? I mean, I literally am thinking like, really, sir? Really? I mean, I'm getting so mad just thinking, nope, can't. Well, tell me what you can do, sir. Tell me what you can do. I mean, literally, that's where my brain went. And I'm like, oh my God, we've learned nothing. Okay. So like, usher in now this like mindfulness and like perspective, Meredith, of like, hey, we're all connected, we're all together, we're all doing the best we can. Cause that shit drives me crazy. But like, now who am I? You know what I mean? Like, so interesting to then marry the idea of our sacred ground, like referencing last week's conversation with this week's conversation around perfectionism, and I hate it. I mean, God, this is hard effing work. It's so hard. Inconvenient.
It is so inconvenient. The other thing that this chapter got me thinking about is, did you listen to Brené's podcast episode with Harriet Lerner about the art of the apology?
Yes. It was so painful.
I feel it haunts me. That mastering how to really apologize has to be key to this work, don't you think?
Yeah. Repeat your question, because now I got to sit with that again, because I'm still puffed
up. No, you're good. Let's breathe.
Yeah.
The advocate in you is like, oh, hell no.
Oh, God, she's so pissed right now. She's so immature and pissed.
So my question, because this is what I've realized is going to be key to this, the areas of my life where I'm prone to perfectionism and even not seeing how imperfect I am, like being blind to my imperfections, is this conversation that Brené and Harriet Lerner had about the art of the apology. Like, I feel like apologizing well, it just feels very related to this work around perfectionism, maybe just to me or for me, because that's something, since I listened to that podcast episode, I've been trying to get better at apologizing to Jeff, and it's hard.
Yes, it's the worst.
And to not follow it up with a but, like to just say, I'm sorry I did X, and fully own it and not follow it up with, but it's because I thought X, Y, Z, or not try to explain your point of view or save face at all, but to just own what you did. It's so hard.
Okay, tell me about that for all of us on the perfectionism scale. Like, tie back for us apologizing with internal reflection around perfectionism, because maybe there are times when the apologies are outward, but are there also times when the apologies are inward?
Before I answer that, do you have a bird or a cricket?
And we do. There's a bird talking outside my window right now.
Well, maybe this comes back to what you were saying at the beginning, is that for you, perfectionism seems to be tied to arrogance in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Because if I'm being honest, the perfectionistic tendencies in me, yeah, there's also arrogance that's so tied up in that, which makes when I screw up, which I inevitably screw up, it's like even in even in the act of owning my screw up, I still want to spin it. You know what I mean? Like, I still want you to understand why I did what I did.
Sure.
Because to your point, it's perception, right? So like, if I can explain where I was coming from and like why I had good intentions, but it, like to Harriet Lerner's point about the apology, like apologizing isn't about, like, yes, it has benefits to you, but you should apologize for the benefit of the other person. Like, you should own what you did and stop there. And so it's like, it just feels connected in some way that, like, in order to overcome my perfectionism and or arrogance, I probably need to get really good at apologizing well, which is to say, stop spinning it, stop caring about the perception, care more about your own growth, which means owning what you screwed up.
You know, yeah, okay. Yes. I have another thought, and it's going to feel a little... I don't know why this came up, this other thought I had around perfectionism while you were talking.
I'm here for it.
We're just going to roll with it for a second.
I'm here for it.
But perfectionism, I wrote in my book, perfectionism equals pain management.
Ooh. Yes.
Does that mean anything for you, or does that like what comes up for you as I say that?
Yes. Because I feel like perfectionism, and I think Brené says this, it's this belief that if we live perfectly, we can minimize the pain of shame and blame. Like, if we do everything right, yes, then people won't blame us for stuff. People won't shame us for anything. Yeah. But it's like, it's founded on a false belief because you can't be perfect. And you can't outrun pain. Mm-hmm. But, management.
Yeah. Isn't that powerful?
Yes.
I don't mean to be like, isn't my thought powerful? But like the idea, the notion of that, like, and then when she says it, so this was also helpful for me. Maybe I'm like coming down off of my self-righteous rock and like it, like really connecting with some empathy for, I need to, honestly, I get so puffed up, but like to develop some empathy around perfectionism, perfectionism as pain management, but also her sentence where she says, or her line where she says, it's terrifying to risk when you're a perfectionist. Your self-worth is on the line.
Yeah.
So there really is this notion that, like, unless I am seen as X, Y, or Z, like, my worth goes out the window.
Yes.
Unless I can maintain this, you know, facade, this image, this doing these things this certain way, like, this, my worth is on the line here. And how scary would that be to walk around thinking, like, not even, I don't think there's a conscious thought of this, but this subconscious thought, this connection to, like, my behavior is my worth. The way that people perceive me is my worth.
Yeah.
You know, like, that is, whew, man, like, that is devastating to not know your inherent worth.
I know.
Oh.
Okay, and here, like, everything you're saying, I totally agree with, and I think there's an area of life for all of us that we believe that. I think the way
yes.
we live our
yes.
life shows, so the last thing
agreed.
I'll say, I'm currently going through a course that Jim Finley does called The Spirituality of Healing. He says something about how everything that you're saying, we have to risk going to the places that it hurts the most, right? Like he says, when you're willing to admit the thing that hurts the most to somebody who is not going to abandon or evade you, you have the opportunity then to see reflected in their eyes, in your super fragile state, your inherent worth. Like somebody who's not going to be shocked by it, not going to use it against you, not hold it against you. And so it's like in entering that pain together and like being across from somebody who's not going to be fazed by it or hold it against you, then you actually see your own self-worth reflected in that person or mirrored back to you in that person in your most fragile state. And he's like, that's what healing is. Like, that's how we get there, is by admitting those places that we have the most shame or that we're most afraid of admitting or risking in the presence of somebody who we can trust and who, I don't know, that connected what you were saying about, like, it's what you always say. We have to go through it, right? It's like the only way is to enter the pain. And I feel like these areas of our life where we're prone to perfectionism is, to your point, like avoiding the pain as opposed to like entering into it so that it could be healed or transformed.
And I wonder too what it looks like to seek out that safety. If you are somebody who resonates, and we all do, we're all on the spectrum, as Nicole has said, like, of perfectionism and there being some type of shame or war within yourself and this need for this certain perception or some type of need, like, what does it look like to seek out a space that feels tender and hopeful and can catch you. Maybe it's a spiritual director or like literally a silent retreat. You don't know him. You see him for a week and then you leave and you don't see him again. Maybe that's the safest place to start, right? Or you have a best friend or a counselor or a therapist or whatever. Yeah. But like, right, you have someone who can tenderly reflect back to you safety that you are good just as you are. So I don't know. There's something to be said for that. So I feel like we can kind of take that energy into yes and. What do you think?
Let's do it.
Now it's time for Yes And, the part of the show where we unpack our so what moments. If at any point during this conversation you've had the thought, yes, and now what? This is for you.
This is the Yes And Power Hour.
Yes
so
and
that
power
I can make
hour.
It to a yoga class, which is usually my yes and that I need to do more yoga. Do you have anything that's springing up for you, Mare?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I'm just still connecting. I don't know if I have a yes and. I think I'm still connecting with like the continuation of the idea. And I think maybe it is for me. I have actively entered into a more empathetic space in this conversation around perfectionism that exists within me, the perfectionism that exists within, you know, humanity, right? Of like, where, you know, someone has found some safety where there can be some self-compassion, right? Of like, oh gosh, made that mistake, next, you know? And it's so refreshing to be on the other side of where you're like,
yes.
Oh wow. And so A, if you have that, please keep modeling it for the rest of us who get stuck. And then I think that maybe that's it. Maybe that is the and of like, those of us who maybe, I'm not, I'm just saying in general, those of us who are maybe a bit more free in that space and who can extend ourselves more easily, self-compassion, and who have been doing this work for a while, like model that all day, because there are so many of us, yeah, who are locked up in our own perfectionism and we need someone to show us like it's okay if we mess up or if we're perceived a certain way or misstep or whatever. I don't know. There's something about safety and tenderness that's coming up for me to penetrate perfectionism.
This is such a like not a deep response to what you just said, but it reminds me of an episode of Friends where like maybe Phoebe calls Rachel stuck up and somebody calls Monica, maybe it's perfectionistic, and then they say, well, Phoebe, you're flighty, and she's like, oh yeah, I am flighty. And like Rachel and Monica are both pissed that they called each other out for being whatever they said, and like Phoebe fully owns it. She's like, yeah, I totally am. And like doesn't apologize for
That's
it, doesn't
brilliant.
It's just like, yep.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, we need more people to own their imperfections more, like unapologetically, and just like, yeah.
Yeah. I think Glennon Doyle does that so beautifully.
I love that. I think my yes and just, and maybe we'll cut it out, but at some point there was a bird chirping like very energetically on Meredith's end. And we just took a pause to laugh. And I think that's my yes and of like, I just need to take life so much less seriously than I sometimes do. And like, make time to just laugh at the ridiculousness of some of this. And I know I'm going to go on about it until I'm probably done reading it, but this universe book is really helping me with that. Of just like,
sure.
I catch myself sometimes zooming out and recognizing the ridiculousness of like, I'm sitting on a sphere in space that's orbiting a giant star. And I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, it just, you start to like, just be overcome by the absurdity of some of the things that we worry about.
It's true. I think that's a helpful image, you know, for sure.
Thanks for listening to the Room for Both podcast. We're always open for feedback. So if there was something that you resonated with or would like for us to discuss, please visit roomforbothpodcast.com or find us on Instagram at roomforbothpodcast and drop us a line. And also, while you're at it, would you do us a solid and rate this podcast so that we can eventually pay our sound guy?
It just landed and it just went to town.
I was like, am I hearing things?
It's a bird. Can't control it. I mean, it really wants us to know it's here.
He is so chatty.